Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello, everyone.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an inside and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 98 is once again being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. Where are we broadcasting from?
We are broadcasting from beautiful Lawrenceville, Georgia.
As opposed to still chilly, snow-laden Texas.
Well, in Georgia, specifically in this area, we had rain for like 5 days straight. And right. So today is like the first day that we are able to see dry streets in the sun. Because it's been overcast and gray and nasty and rainy here for days. It's still a little bit chilly outside with, I think...
Early in the mornings, yeah. I went for a run this morning and I had to really garb up. But by the time I got done, it was like 45 or so.
I was going to say somewhere in the 40s or 50s in the midday. And then it gets down, you know, high 20s in the evening.
Yeah, beautiful though. One of the reasons we live here is because of the weather, amongst many other things. So,
of course.
That's the non-weather rock report on the weather. So, I was talking with Dr. Reese a couple of days ago, and I said, I forgot to mention, if the weather rock is moved outside of the circle, it's either earthquake or very windy. So, and I think she said, tornado too. So, yeah. So, I guess there's three options there. We need to find a better, smarter weather rock. I didn't really have a word of the week or phrase of the week or case of the week.
I have already said this three times off air.
You want it to be subcutaneous?
I think we should use the word subcutaneous.
Okay.
I like the word subcutaneous.
Okay. So not intramuscular, which is how the COVID vaccines are being administered, but subcutaneous, which is how we administer most of our vaccines.
Correct.
Do we have, there is currently not a vaccine on the market that has to be administered IM or intramuscularly?
Not that I'm aware of. There may be some that we don't carry, right? So, like, I know, like, Zoetis, and maybe they're still sub-Q, but they have, like, half-dose vaccines. Or Merck even has some of those, where instead of giving an entire mil, they do, you know, 0.5. And so I don't know if those need to be IM or if they can still go sub-Q. I'm not quite sure.
So long ago, years ago, 15 years ago probably, we were administering a Lyme vaccine that we figured out was labeled to be given IM and we were given it sub-Q. You know how we figured it out?
Pet had a reaction?
Major reactions, yeah. Yeah. So rabies used to be that way. When I got out of vet school, all rabies vaccines had to be given IM. But since then, we have progressed. And now most of our vaccines, there should be an option to pick one that can be given SQ or subcutaneous, which means sub, when you break down the word, sub.
Under. Beneath.
Cute.
Skin.
So C-U-T. Yeah. Cut or cute skin.
Okay.
So, under the skin. All right. So, this was your word of the week. What else do you want to add?
Well, I just think it's interesting because we it's one of those words that we often talk about here in the practice. And I think...
And we say sub-Q.
Sometimes when we talk about it, we maybe forget that clients don't really understand what we're talking about, right? So, we might have a kidney case like my dog Fonzie, who's getting sub-Q fluid administration every other day.
And why is he getting that?
So he gets it because he has a chronic renal disease or kidney disease.
Or trying to diurese him.
Yes. But, you know, so we oftentimes have these conversations with other clients who have pets in kidney failure or kidney disease as well, that they need sub-Q or subcutaneous fluids. And a lot of people still will say like, oh yeah, my dog's coming in for IV fluids today. And it's really not, because IV is a short term for intravenous, which means it's going into the vein directly, and sub-Q is really under the skin. And so, I don't know. I think it's a cool word.
So, what are the methods of administering, let's say, drugs or vaccines with the common abbreviations? So, SQ, and we abbreviate that to say sub-Q, which means subcutaneous.
Mm-hmm.
We already said IM or intramuscular.
Right.
What else?
There's IP.
Oh, you stole my thunder. I was going to say that, which means
intraperitoneal.
And what else?
Well, let's talk about what peritoneal means.
Okay.
What does it mean? So
the peritoneum is the
lining of the stomach.
The lining of the abdominal cavity.
Well, same. Well, okay, I say so stomach. Gonna, yeah. Okay, so that's actually a great comment because we talk about that all the time. So in human
medicine,
stomach
is in the abdomen.
But we in human medicine we often talk about, or humans in general, we say, "Oh, my stomach hurts," but really, it's not your actual physical stomach; it's your intestines or. You might have a side pain or something. Yeah, whatever. You just kind of generalize your entire abdomen as your stomach. But to your point, yes, an IP is the lining of the abdomen or abdominal cavity.
So administering something into the abdominal cavity. You said IV, which is intravenous.
Mm-hmm. Intravenous, yep.
Venous, I guess I'm, yeah. Venous is more appropriate. What else?
Oh, gosh. I thought of another There's ID, which is intradermal. So where sub-Q goes under the skin, intradermal actually goes between the layers of the skin.
Okay. When I'm doing orthopedics on these knees, what kind of injection do I give?
Oh, God.
To block out the joint.
I was going to say something when you said orthopedic as far as like intraosseous, but that's not what you're doing.
Nope, that's another one. Although intra-articular.
Articular, so into the joint.
Yep.
Yes. Yep. Okay.
Intraosseous. I've never seen that abbreviated IO, but we don't talk about that much. Intraosseous fluid administration is the most common use of the term, to where you have a very young puppy or kitten.
Well, yeah, they'll do intraosseous catheters.
Yeah, catheter, or just put a needle in and administer fluids that way. Yeah. So, all right. Well, that's
cool. But they have to have nice soft bones.
Yep.
Like.
Yep.
Young.
Pediatrics.
Puppies. Yeah. Yep. I would imagine kids could actually get intraosseous as well. Because if you think
about
it, their veins are very, very small, which is what we run into with our pediatric puppies and kittens, right? They're just too tiny. Even our smallest, you know, intravenous catheter is probably bigger than the wall of the vein itself.
All right. So IM, IV, sub-Q, IP, ID, IA, the not often used IO.
Isn't there something for in the eye?
Intraocular, but you don't really give anything in the eye. Into the eye. Give, meaning administer.
Yeah, I don't know.
Shot-wise, so.
So, but sub-Q, right? So, we have now recently.
Oh, oh.
What?
Case of the week.
Okay.
IU.
Intrauterine. Okay.
So, our case. This,
oh, gross.
Yeah. So we did have a patient present.
I say gross, but it's really not, I guess.
A couple of days ago, that the owner suspected this pet had eaten her intrauterine device, correct?
Yes.
That was placed in the garbage can, then it went missing. And so IU, intrauterine. That particular case, we radiographed it, did not see anything show up, but the device was supposed to be radiolucent. Meaning it does not show up on x-rays. And we wound up doing gastroscopy, scoping of the stomach with a flexible endoscope, looking for the device, and did not find it. So,
well, so the original concern with this case is essentially that it's a birth control. It's an estrogen product that they instill into human beings to help, you know, obviously control procreation. Yeah. And so we originally thought that, you know, this dog is going to have some sort of estrogen issues if we leave this in there or wait for it to pass.
Right. Obstruction or hormonal issues.
So the in my opinion, when I heard about the phone call, that was my first thing, right? So the hormonal issues, and then secondary, I wasn't quite sure how big these things are, the obstruction. And in the sense that it's in a ring circular fashion, how is it going to pass through the intestines? But we found out that essentially these types of products, you know, they lose their, I don't know how to even say it, their estrogen level decreases, in which place they need to get replaced.
Yeah, they're
which
not is, releasing the hormone. Yeah.
Yeah, which is why when it's outside of the body, typically it's not really a big deal. So then we went down the road of, okay, now it could be potentially an obstruction or foreign body.
Foreign body, for sure. Okay. Whew.
But it wasn't.
It was not.
Okay.
We did not find the device in the animal's GI tract. So,
real quick, back to sub-Q, right? So the reason I wanted to talk about sub-Q is because we've been doing these Freestyle Libre these like monitoring devices for diabetic patients. And I've been watching Sling TV, and so I've been watching a lot of commercials, which I despise commercials, which is why I usually watch a streaming service, but Sling is obviously making their money off of commercials. Yeah, so whatever, and I digress. So they have a lot of Freestyle Libre commercials for human beings where they essentially fix this device onto their skin, and it gives them a constant reading of their blood glucose level. So we're doing the same thing in pets now.
Yep, pretty and important. It's, it's pretty accurate, pretty important tool, but yet
It has essentially a needle that pokes into this patient subcutaneously.
Yep.
So anyways, very cool.
Subcutaneous, an awesome word of the week. Thank you for suggesting that.
Whatever.
All right. So healthy pet, happy life. We talked a little bit about 3-year vaccines versus 1-year vaccines. In order for us to have healthy pets who provide a happy life for themselves and their owners, we have to be able to deliver that health care as a clinic, right?
Yeah. So yesterday was actually Love Your Pet Day, National Love Your Pet Day. Did you see that?
I did. I saw the Facebook share, I think, from you this morning. I clicked on it.
Yeah.
How can people find that? I thought that was pretty cute.
So if you go to our Facebook page, Georgia Veterinary Associates, or any of our sister hospitals, or I guess our sub hospitals that way, we made a post yesterday for National Love Your Pet Day. And essentially, if you love your pet, our comment was, let's see if I can find it real quick. It's National Love Your Pet Day. The best way to show your pet how much you love them is making sure they are up to date with all of their healthcare needs. A healthy pet makes for a happy life.
So I thought that was perfect. That's the message we're trying to put out. Broadcast, put out. It's like putting out a fire. So who came up with that?
Healthy Pet, Happy Life. That would be Asher Miller.
Okay. Yep. That's not what I meant. With the Facebook, that little meme or whatever you call those things.
It says it was posted by Sendable, which is, I think, the program that we're using through Genius Vet. So I would imagine it was either Rhonda or Jennifer.
Or both. Okay, cool. So I thought that was awesome. I was kind of going down the importance of our staff with delivery of service and keeping pets healthy. And the reason I did that is we've had a bunch of reviews of late. And you touched on this today when we had an interview with a potential new hire, how, I don't know, emotional we get with our staff, how great they are, the job they do. I'm not even sure where I'm going with this, but our staff is hugely important to what we do. I guess that's where I'm going.
They are, absolutely.
Whether it's the doctors or the RVTs or the assistants or the receptionists or the patient care attendants.
And I think they all believe the exact same thing that we're trying to broadcast here on our podcast, is essentially that a healthy pet equals a happy life. And we believe that a healthy pet means that they have great health care. And so all of our staff here, be it our receptionists who are, you know, talking with the clients and discussing patient care often, or our technicians, they're always recommending
what's best for the
medicine.
Pet. Yep. So well said, right? The doctor is recommending what is best to get their pet over an illness or to keep it from getting ill. Same thing with the technicians. We're all working towards a common goal. So we recently had an interview with a potential new associate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had hours of conversation about what we do and why we do it and, you know, kind of what it's like to work here, and certainly invited him to come back. His name is Brian. Invited him to come back and spend some time with us and see if we all are on the same page. Graham, who was on the podcast last spring, it was like May of last year. Right. So continuing to be in conversation with him, he's going to come do a long externship with us. We are looking for people, whether they are lay staff, which support staff, if you will, text reception, et cetera, or doctors who are passionate about what we believe in, which is keeping a pet healthy or getting a pet well as quickly as we can so that they are happy and their clients are, or their owners are happy.
Of course. The pets and the people who love them.
People and the pets who love them.
Same.
Backwards.
Right. Everything can be universally flipped.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess I'm as usual, I'm all over the place. But one of the phrases that came out of some of these tech interviews and reviews was, we were talking about, when we bring new people into the practice, what do we want to do? What's the goal? Do we want to be, you know, quote unquote, mean girls to them and make them feel unappreciated, unwelcomed? Do we want to have open arms and welcome them to the team? What do we want to do? And so Heather B came up with the phrase model. We want to model for them, and we want to mold them into the techs and employees that we want them to be. And so model and mold them. I thought that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And I'd never really thought about it that way, but you know, if you're going to talk the talk, walk the walk,
of that's course.
Been something a lot of people have heard of, but let's model and then mold these new employees, these new clients, these new pets, you know, everything. You can kind of apply that to everything. So, left field, I know about healthy pet, happy life, but just want to talk a little bit about the people that are involved in delivering that.
Sure.
News stories. Angel.
Let's go into what is on the topic of every news station right now, and that is the snowstorm that has hit Texas. So you have some family in Texas. Are they affected by this?
Not really.
No, because they're not in an area, or no, because like they aren't?
They're up in the South Plains Panhandle area, and it's not unusual to have snow there.
Okay. So you have some family in Austin as well, right?
Yep.
So
yep.
Is he pretty surprised? A little different story,
yes.
I saw a picture of the main street in Austin. It's like covered in snow, and people are like, can you believe this?
It's
kind of
like
Texas?
Georgia, I think, right? Austin, yeah. I'm gonna correlate it back here. It's like, oh my gosh, it snowed, and what do we do?
Yeah.
We can't do anything. There's snow on the ground.
Yeah. So the thing about Texas and all these places in Texas that were hit with snow or this winter storm is they don't know how to react to this. You know, the snowpocalypse that happened in Atlanta back 2015, 18, something like that.
Yeah. Didn't you post that picture last week?
I did. Yeah. Well, a couple weeks ago. Yeah. But it's not that like, oh gosh, it's snowing, like everyone go to the store and buy bread and milk. It's bigger than that. It's that the communities and the government and
infrastructure,
that kind of thing, they're not prepared for this type of weather. So like up north where you have, you know, umpteen salt trucks that are ready to go out onto the road, in Atlanta, we didn't have but like one.
Right.
At the time. And so the same kind of thing is happening to Texas. I read somewhere that like they tried to quote unquote electrify a lot of Texas, where they had like a bunch of solar panels and that kind of thing.
The
solar panels had snow
yeah.
on them.
Yeah.
And so they don't necessarily work, which is it's negative.
The windmills as well. The windmills quit working because of the cold temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a ton of windmills in South Plains area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have some friends in Texas, and they're doing fine, but they were without power. As many, many people are in Texas. But more so, I wanted to talk about Texas and the snow, I guess, or the frigid temperatures that are happening there, because animal cruelty cases are apparently on a major surge in Texas, because these people that essentially would typically leave their pet outside have continued to leave their pets outside during these frigid temps. And so there is an article from CNN that says on a normal day, the Houston Society for Prevention and Cruelty gets 25 to 30 calls. But right now they're getting around 150 calls a day.
For people
reporting other
pets
people.
Outside.
Mm-hmm. So it's I read somewhere that there was like an 11-year-old boy in Texas who froze to death, which is terrifying.
Wow.
Well,
let's talk about.
But there's pets also, not to negate the fact that there are human beings out there dying as well. But
right.
There are pets being turned out or left into these frigid temperatures, you know, I would say intentionally. But again, I mean, I'm not there. I don't know what these families are facing. So is it them or the dog? In which case, I think people are always going to choose themselves or their family over their pet.
Let's put another wrinkle on it, though. Some of these pets and or livestock, let's talk about that, don't want to come inside the house. So what can you do? So just because a dog or a cow is outside during a snowstorm does not mean it's cruelty, in my opinion.
Sure.
What are...
If it's cruelty, if they don't have the appropriate shelter.
Exactly.
Which is the same thing that happens in the heat.
So I remember having this conversation with some owners, clients that come here years ago. It's super important during cold conditions. What? So let's say it's 32. Let's say it's 20 degrees outside and there's no wind versus 20 degrees with the 5 mile an hour wind or 20. Point being, the wind really, really chills you, right? The wind chill factor.
Sure.
And so hugely important for people or pets or livestock to be able to get out of the wind. Would you agree?
Of course.
So that's going to really allow you to survive colder temperatures. And then the other aspect would be bedding or clothing.
So I'm going to say more so wetness, right? So like you can have bedding, but if your bedding is soaking wet.
So be able to get out of the wind and out of the snow or rain.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
stay dry.
You can definitely have bedding, but if you have the inappropriate type of bedding, that's going to soak and hold water. It's only going to make you colder. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I guess I'm thinking about a dog. If there's a dog house that the dog will go in, they're out of the elements, right? The wind is not blowing. It's still cold, but they're not getting snowed on or wet.
I'm going to disagree. So you give them a dog house, but they go out and they urinate, and then they come back into their dog house and they have a blanket in there. Now, their blanket is going to get wet. Their body temperature is going to melt the snow.
Usually, they're going to shake it off, actually.
Yeah, but their blanket is not appropriate. I'm going to say if you're going to put a pet in a doghouse outside, it absolutely needs something that is not going to withhold moisture.
Like straw.
Like
wheat straw.
Like straw, for sure. And there's absolutely a difference in straw and hay. Yes?
If you hay is usually eaten straw.
A feed, but it also retains moisture, right? So if you go and you buy a bale of hay, you can't put that in a doghouse. It's not, I mean, you can, but it's not the same. It's not appropriate bedding. Straw.
Yeah,
is
wheat straw is historically a bedding used for pigs primarily, but also dogs that, yeah, it does shed water. I thought we were going to get in a big argument here, but making a point.
But I'm absolutely making a point.
So, wheat straw is an appropriate bedding.
Yeah, it's the same thing, you know, unfortunately for homeless people. They can be out in the elements, but to your point, they are usually going to get cardboard boxes. The cardboard is going to kind of help deter the wind and that kind of thing. But unfortunately, a lot of them actually freeze in temperatures like this as well because the materials that they're laying with are usually absorbent.
Or on their bodies as well. So, anyway, all right, so... You know, I'm sure a lot of these cruelty cases are absolutely on the up and up and should be reported. But I guess my point is just because an animal is outside, let's say a horse is outside, right? They're in a horse barn.
No, I would absolutely agree
with
you.
But they're, you know, whether it's climate controlled or not, they're out of the elements.
Yes. But again, I think it goes back to education, right? So if you're CNN and you're reporting on this, it shouldn't be like, oh, these dogs were found outside in 18 degree temperatures. It should be these dogs were found outside in 18 degree temperatures with no bedding, no housing,
no
nothing.
Yeah. Okay.
And more so like educating the Texan people, you know, like how can you provide...
The Texan people. We call them Texans where I come from.
Well...
Anyway.
How can you educate the Texans?
The Texas people.
Anyways, so in addition to some more Texas-related winter storm issues, have you seen anything about the sea turtles?
I've not. You mentioned this, and after you mentioned it, I immediately thought of the frogs falling out of trees in Florida.
So
is it similar?
I guess it's similar, but it's actually very serious. So like... Apparently, sea turtles off the coast of Texas in the Gulf of Mexico have been essentially stunned or paralyzed. So what happens is once the temperature gets lower than 55 degrees, their heart rates slow so much that they're essentially paralyzed and they can't swim anymore. They're not quite dead unless they drown or they're struck by a boat or they're eaten by a predator, but they are like just, you know, floating, sinking turtles at that point.
Huh.
So there was a group of people that have gone down and they've saved thousands of turtles and they've essentially dry docked them.
And where is this? This is on the Gulf Coast of Texas.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is it Galveston? Is it further south? Corpus Christi? Do you know?
I don't know. I would imagine all of those places are affected. I don't know.
Okay.
South Padre Island Convention Center
South Padre. Okay.
Is where they're all being rehabbed, essentially, and dry docked.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's from all of those essential, those other places that you mentioned as well.
It's kind of between the two. So yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, cool. But it's super interesting. When I first saw this, I thought of, I didn't really chuckle, but I was like, what, are these people serious? Because essentially turtles, like you see this all the time, right? Turtles are like birds. They go to warmer climates. Sea turtles, right? Like you see all the time where the sea turtles migrate and then they come back to their home place and this and that. But apparently these types of sea turtles that live off of the coast of Texas, they always live there because it's always warm. And so what happened was the temperatures dropped so rapidly that they essentially had no place to go and they were all just stunned.
I would believe that. That area is huge for like producing citrus in Texas. So very much like Florida, right? You ever once in a while hear about a freeze that affects Florida and completely destroys the orange crop. So I'd believe that.
So good for those people to get out there and to save these turtles. Every creature, in my opinion, is important to the environment in which they provide. But it's kind of like the whole deforestation thing that you talked about, right? Or like these... burns that people do intentionally. Remember when we were talking about this before?
It's like D4. What are you talking about?
Deforestation. So like in some instances, some things are supposed to happen. You know what I mean? But yeah. I don't necessarily think that this is one of those.
Yeah. Well, human involvement. When do you not get involved?
Yes, exactly.
When do you get involved? And yeah, yeah. The sea turtles in North Carolina, on North Carolina beaches.
What about them?
Well, so some people get very passionate about saving all the eggs and the little sea turtles that can't make it back to the ocean.
Oh yeah. This happens in St. Simon as well, off of the coast of Georgia.
That's just like a whole nother.
Do you remember
world.
We had a pet care staff member who worked here and she actually moved to the coast of Georgia to be involved in the sea turtle
rescue. The sea turtles. But to your point, should they be rescued or not? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that we should do everything we can because we're capable, right? Like, we're smarter, we have opposable thumbs, all that kind of thing. But to your point, like, when is too much involvement? When is it detrimental?
Yeah, so one would never know with the whole sea turtle project. So,
yeah.
But they, I know in those areas, sea turtles are treated like, or thought of as kings and queens. I mean, they are,
yeah,
it's crazy. So coming from the South Plains or West Texas, that's, you know, definitely news to me. I never heard of that or thought about that. So, All right.
One other story real quick related to the snowstorm that has been taking hold of majority of the United States. Did you hear about the dog who was rescued from Lake Michigan?
No.
Okay. So I didn't read too much into it, but I have a somewhat comment that I think is interesting, but apparently the dog was near a dog beach in Chicago area.
What's a dog beach?
A beach that allows dogs.
Okay. And then they're going to be in and out of the water and.
Yes. So typically, yeah. Like if you go to a dog beach and you see like dog poop on the beach, like you're not surprised, right?
It's not like a dog park where it's, I mean, meant for dogs, but dogs are allowed at the beach with their people.
Both.
Okay.
It's meant for dogs. Like people will go there, they'll take their dogs off leash, they can run in and out of the water, that kind of thing. So apparently this dog, Bessie, slipped into Lake Michigan and managed to climb onto like an ice chunk. So off of the coast of Chicago. So Chicago Fire basically posted a picture, a video of her rescue, if you are interested in all
of
that.
Like the TV show, Chicago Fire?
No, like the actual real? Chicago Fire Department, FDD, CFD. So what I thought was the most interesting about this case, like thankfully the dog did not freeze to death. She, you know, was rescued, but she is an Australian Labradoodle.
Australian Labradoodle, not an Aussie Doodle.
Not an Aussie Doodle.
But a Labradoodle from Australia.
Not really either that. So it definitely begged me because at first, you know, we've talked about this. And honestly, yesterday, my aunt in Alabama texted me. She was like, hey, what do you think about a Labradoodle? And I was like, well, they're cute, but basically, in my opinion, they're a designer breed. They're not like a known breed. You have to be very careful where you're getting them from and like mm-hmm. what they're mixed with and da, 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 da. But essentially, as we talked about before, most people seek them out because they're considered hypoallergenic, right? You get the right. best of both worlds. So you get the personality of the Labrador or the Golden or whatever other breed you're mixing this poodle with, but you get the size and the hypoallergenic traits of the poodle. Anyways, so that article led me into learning more about an Australian Labradoodle.
Okay.
Which is not, as you mentioned, to be confused with the Aussie Doodle, which is an Australian Shepherd and a poodle mix. This is apparently a mix of a poodle, a Labrador, and the English and the American Cocker Spaniel. So it is an intentional quadruple breed. They are very much trying to get this breed.
English and American Cocker Spaniel.
They are very much trying to get this breed recognized by places like AKC.
Or Continental.
Or CKC. Kennel Club.
Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah. So interesting, right?
Is there a picture of it?
There is a picture of them. The purpose of these pets, as they list here, is for service or companionship.
Cassie?
They are super friendly, super gentle, super intelligent. They range anywhere between 15 and 65 pounds.
Wow.
Now tell me that is hysterical, right?
Where's the picture?
There's a picture of a puppy right here, and then there's a whole bunch there. So they range also in color from it looks like what you would suggest is like a party color with a multiples, browns, whites, blacks, and then that apricot looking color, and then more of a chocolate color.
Well, we've seen that variety in the doodles that we see in the practice here. And, you know, we used to work with a breeder who's no longer breeding those dogs, but mini doodles to standard mm-hmm. to giant doodles. So it's just kind of whatever, however they come out, I think. So interesting.
Some of the cons that are listed here, which I think is actually quite interesting that a lot of people don't really take into consideration when they're getting a doodle, is the upkeep or the grooming that it takes. So they need typically regular, so every 4 to 6 week professional mm-hmm. grooming to yeah. trim that hair. Otherwise they get to be like a giant mop.
Yep. Like a regular poodle, right? Yeah, I mean, you need to groom them. So. Yep.
So I just thought that was super interesting. An Australian Labradoodle.
Yeah.
Who would have known?
Who would have thought?
Bessie just made them popular.
Yeah.
Bessie.
Thank goodness Bessie.
Bessie is okay.
All right. That's all I have.
You don't have anything else?
Nope.
Alrighty. Well, check in next week, guys, as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. Make sure you hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.